are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show, Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird. Thank President Rick Gallo. Man, thank you so much. He's really a good brother, guy. For folk who may not know Rick, Rick is supported a lot more than the Saints down here, man. The Convention Center, Superdome, one of the leaders in fighting for historic black universities, not just his alma mater Grambling, but Southern, and really those throughout the country. So we appreciate the time he spent with her. But right now, Mr. Think, gosh, one of the most provocative journalists in America today, someone who makes us think. Gosh, Jeff Thomas, welcome back to the Good Morning Show, man.
Oliver, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it, OT.
Well, we like having some Jeff Thomas and some Think 504. And let me say this. It's always one of the segments that people look forward to. Let me say that during this Thanksgiving, man, we want to give you your flowers. We appreciate what you do. You have ruffled some feathers. Mm-hmm. You've challenged some friends.
I have.
You know, and you've really given us the stuff we need to make our own independent decisions. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oliver, for those kind words. And I can say the same thing about you. And so, you know,
you make me think.
You know, coming from you, I feel great hearing that. And it makes me feel that all of the work that we put in is worthwhile. So
now that I finished sucking up, right?
All right.
I want you to keep coming back.
That's right.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, man, it was. Man, we had a house full. It was incredible.
You look like you survived
it. I barely made it. Let me tell you, I needed this coffee that Lee didn't bring me again. You know, I don't know. I used to come and get coffee. I don't even get coffee anymore, man. But I brought my own coffee with the help of this coffee. And I had, you know, one too many drinks maybe yesterday, a couple of cigars, a lot of food, house full of people. We enjoyed it, man.
Family.
It was family all around.
You know, I kind of see a trend for us getting back to family.
Yeah.
You know, there's some Brother Sekou and others who called and who remind us that in the midst of challenges, we really got some good things going on. And I'm starting to notice them. I know that the national climate has African-American people now. We see them transferring their money to African-American lending institutions.
Yeah.
We see people are focusing on, like Brother El-Assad and others, focusing on keeping our money in our community.
Mm-hmm.
Not where we need it to be yet, but are you seeing those trends too?
I do. And let me tell you, yesterday I felt really good. I had a young fellow who came, a college student who came and visited, and he just thanked me for letting him come into our family. He talked about how great he felt being around our family and had the warmth and love and that kind of thing. And so I think as we have to, you know, come together as people because of the influences that are going all around us.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see an explosion of people being capitalized into the black economy and ourselves. And as we invest in ourselves, as we do things to make our community more prosperous.
And I know we have an agenda, but you said something off air that I thought was important, especially given the conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
As bad as we may feel about the national political clan, it may actually be a good thing in terms of forcing our community or giving us to begin to recognize the opportunities within our own right now.
Listen, you always say this. After Katrina, they ain't coming for us, right? The deal is that, you know, people feel apprehensive about this Trump election. I think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we be more self-reliant, that we understand that we control our own economic future.
And you worked hard to defeat Trump.
Absolutely. I sure did.
Right.
But I'm not upset about it. And in fact, I really, truly, and we can talk about it a little bit, think Trump is going to be good for the black community.
Right.
And let me tell you how, why. I think that, you know, Trump ran a politically divisive campaign, and he was able, he probably had great polling and great information going in, that the way to get into this presidency was to bring out the white vote and bring out people who hadn't voted. Just like Obama was able to inspire black people to come out in record numbers, he was able to inspire rural whites to come out in record numbers, right? And so the thing is, though, that while that may be his constituency that was able to propel him into office, just like Obama didn't give every black man $1 million check, Trump's not going to be able to give every white rural person $1 million check. And so, you know, the realities of the economy are significant. And so I think that he has a playing field that he has to deal with in terms of, while the Senate and the Congress are Republican, there are many who are more conservative than he is, and there are many that are more liberal than he is. And so he's got to find a path to victory, as he talks about.
So I think the bottom line, though, there's an opportunity for us that whether even though we abhor the fact that he won this election, there's a chance to get closer to our own.
Absolutely. But also, I think that the way he's got to be victorious, the way he's going to be a good president, is to make the economy strong. And as he makes the economy strong, black people are going to benefit.
Wow, that's real talk. That takes the emotion out of it. The rise in white nationalism, that has been some of the things you've instructed us to be on the lookout for.
Right.
We're seeing more groups who were suppressed become vocal now.
Right. So what is, you use that term, what is white nationalism?
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I mean that is a real thing, because we're hearing that on the radio, on TV, all over the place. What is white nationalism? I'm going to tell you, it's different than white supremacy.
They're
not the same at all. And, I've been on this air every month, and we've talked about and drilled deep into what white supremacy
is. Implicit bias.
Implicit bias, confirmation bias, all of those kinds of things. But this is different. So white supremacy is an innate belief, right, that white people are superior. Mm-hmm. And it's a racist belief. Whereas white nationalism is the belief that the national identity should be built around white ethnicity, right? And that white people should therefore maintain both a demographic majority and a dominance in the culture, in the public life.
And we heard that in the video that was released of the gentleman who were having a conference in Washington, D.C. He basically just explained what white nationalism is.
That's right. There's a distinction between white supremacy and white nationalism. And white supremacy, again, is the belief that white people are innately superior. But white nationalism.
And white liberals and white moderates, they're part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we understand, and we talked about this before on air, that black people have this belief that white people are.
There's some black people who are white supremacists.
That's right. That's funny, but you're right. Absolutely right.
No matter what their complexion is.
That's right. But white nationalism is about maintaining political and economic dominance, not just a numerical dominance, but the political and economic dominance. And where the change is
from. And it's
from,
an international movement.
That's right. But in America, let's focus on America.
Okay.
In America, it was easy to believe that America was a white nation, right? It was founded by white people. Mm-hmm. America was, right? And, white people were able to. Well, the country was here
Christopher
before.
Christopher Columbus found
it. Yeah, well, exactly right. We're not going to even.
He told the Indians, hey, man, I found this.
That's right. Yeah. Where y'all been? I don't know, but this is my land.
I ain't laying no Plymouth Rock.
That's right.
Go, I'm sorry.
That's right. You got me. You throw me off.
I'm sorry. When you said they found it.
That's right.
What you mean we?
Right. But, for a long time, America was. It was easy for a white person in America to have this white identity about America, right? You had black people who were enslaved. You had black people who were Jim Crow laws against them. And so it was easy to wake up in the morning if you were a white guy and say, this is my land, and meant that this was white land.
Right.
But, recently, demographic shifts, the civil rights movement, having a black president, having all of these immigrants coming into the country, seeing the demographic shifts that white people are going to be the minority in 25, 30 years. Well, you gave a great speech the other day, by the way, at Justice and Beyond.
Thank you.
And it was incredible, and you talked about that. But, the facts are, that right now, white people are still the predominant force in America. That's the reality that we have to deal with. But the white guy who was economically disenfranchised because of the Great Recession under George Bush, he sees immigrants coming in, taking his jobs. And so that's what Trump tapped into, make America great again. He tapped into, you're going to have a job, you're going to be secure, this is going to be your country again.
I want to talk to you about what you've tried to do to use history to educate white people about the fears of white nationalism. And in many cases, if you're a victim of white supremacy, most people are, if you don't understand the difference, and this is why this segment is important, if you don't understand the difference between white supremacy and white nationalism is scary.
Yeah, it really is, because white nationalists believe that America should be a white country. And frankly, part of their one of their major tenets is that all mm-hmm. people of color leave America, that it be a white nation. And while that may be impractical, Trump's not going to deport 11 million people. Black people aren't going anywhere. We've been entrenched in American society forever. But if you go to the extreme fringes of white nationalism,
public policy, economics, education, those things could all be threatened. And that's the beauty of what you're trying to do, not just educate African Americans, but also educate whites.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so, all politics are local, right? Mm-hmm. So how does this big discussion have to deal with local people right here in New Orleans? And so since all politics are national, but we're talking about Donald Trump, the effect that Donald Trump can have locally is that he's going to change the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. And so we've had this police department that recently has been an abusive police department, and now there's a consent decree.
Good point.
The consent decree is brought by the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. They are the people who enforce it. They are the people who implement it. They are the reason it's here is because of the Justice Department. But if the Justice Department changes, they could tomorrow come in and say, you know what, we don't need any more consent decrees. Now, let me tell you, consent decrees, we talked about this before, it's a national phenomenon. There are consent decrees in just about every major city because we have abusive police departments across the country. But locally in New Orleans, if the consent decree goes away, we really are going to have a strong independent police monitor, and that's one of the
our U.S. attorney.
U.S.
attorney. He does not have a reputation for targeting African Americans.
That's right.
He targets corruption.
That's correct. Now, is he going to stick around? Because he is appointed by the president, and it's up to the president to decide whether or not Ken Polite stays on as U.S. attorney or not. And he's done a great job. He really has been, he's been strong against police corruption. He's been strong against political corruption. He's done a great job since he's been here. But he may be gone because of Trump's decision. So
let's get to Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
Trump's appointments. He has not apologized for playing to his base.
That's right. That's right. So, and that's the thing. That's the balance, I think, that Trump's going to have to strike. Because mm-hmm. while he elevated Prince Rebus to his chief of staff, on the other side of the spectrum, he's got Steve Bannon, who is the leading white nationalist in the country, as his chief strategist.
Right.
And Steve Bannon was his major political campaign strategist. And so they understand the politics of racial division. And they understand the politics of racial divisiveness. And how that plays out going forward is going to be important.
And for people, whether you like Steve Bannon or not, he's brilliant.
He absolutely is.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to the lines right now. Line one, Oyelowo, you're on with Mr. Think504.com, Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, OT.
Good morning, good brother. Bless you.
504 and early bird.
Good morning to you. Oyelowo, how you doing today, brother? You had a good Thanksgiving?
Work with me. I'm moving kind of slow, but the reason why I called is you struck a nerve on the dissent decree. Are you familiar with Mr. 504, Jeff Sessions?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
We have to get to that.
Nominated for Attorney General.
That's right.
And
that's
you just made me think, and I off and on, I think sometimes. So, but anyway,
well, good. Keep
this
thinking.
Guy is the biggest racist you ever want to see. So all that progress we had with dissent decrees, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
might be pulled back if this man is nominated because we have an all-Republican Senate.
That's right.
A confirmation. So this might be Attorney General.
That's
Black
right.
people sit back and think Jeff Sessions. And if you don't know who he is, Mr. 504, educate our people, because this man was up a federal judge back in the 80s. He's the, put it like this, he's got a KKK card carrying in his wallet.
Mm-hmm.
He's the real deal. Yeah. And it's very scary that this man's going to be our attorney general. Anyway, let me finish cleaning up and
Thank
stuff.
You.
You just struck the nerve. All right. Happy
holidays. Same to you, Oyelowo. Bless you.
He's right.
Steve Bannon is an example. Jeff Sessions is a perfect example. His political career had many challenges early on.
Mm-hmm.
It was derailed because of his white nationalists and, extreme relationship. Right. So
former U.S. attorney in Alabama, right. And got in trouble because he called another U.S. attorney a boy who was an African American.
Right. Right.
But you know, he has been a strict conservative. He has tried to take away as many of the progressive rights that mm-hmm. black people have attained over the years. I mean, he has been a leader of voter suppression in Alabama. He's been a leader of all kinds of negative political influences in the state of Alabama. Okay. And it's scary that he's going to be the U.S. attorney. But, you know, the good thing is that all politics are local, and that's what you were talking about earlier. As we have these threats on African-American society, how do we get better? How do we protect ourselves? How do we move forward? And I think, you know, under these kinds of outside threats, that the African-American community gets strong.
504-260-9265. Jeff Thomas, MrThink504.com. One of the leading intellectuals here in this town, especially when you talk about public policy, social science movements, white supremacy, and economics. We're having a wide open conversation. Let's talk about an issue that you're also concerned about. Mm-hmm. The last time Republicans had their movement, mm-hmm. Democrats spent more time trying to out-Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that move with Bill Clinton and the move to the middle
mm-hmm.
and the move to the right.
Mm-hmm.
How should Democrats begin to conduct themselves? Because Democrats have a tendency to give up or try to morph into whatever is dominant. We see many of them switch parties
right.
after the last movement.
Right.
What's your concern about how Democrats conduct themselves?
Well, you know, this phenomenon that now the Democratic Party has to rebrand itself and redo itself is amazing to me. I remember 6 months ago, they were talking about the Republican Party is dead. You know, there's no more Republican Party. They don't have any constituency. Now they have the presidency, the right. U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, and people are saying the Democratic Party is in deep trouble. Well, what do we have to do now? You know, I think this, that there definitely has to be some soul searching. I think part of the problem that the Democratic Party faces in the African-American community is that they have taken African-Americans for granted. That's part of the reason that people weren't motivated to go out to vote for Hillary Clinton, because the fact is that there's very little that the Democratic Party has done for African-Americans. But, you know, that's part of the American way. The fact is that we have to do for ourselves, that we can't rely upon political parties, the political machine, to determine our future. It's up to us to become self-reliant, self-determinate people. And when we do those things, then what the policies mm-hmm. of the Democratic Party are going to be shaped around that. As we become more involved, as we become mm-hmm. More economically viable, and doing the things that we talked about mm-hmm. earlier, you know, doing business with African American mm-hmm. businesses, advertising on WBOK, mm-hmm. advertising on Think 504, mm-hmm. Putting your money in black banks.
Right.
If we do those kinds of things, then the political machine is responsive to the people, because, you know, because black people have voted in blocks for Democratic candidates, they have not taken the concerns of African-American people.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the future of African-Americans in political parties. One of the fastest growing segments are independents.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah, we have so much more to talk about.
Yes, we
and
do.
And hours usually not enough, but you want to tune in. Let everyone know we have MrThink504.com on. Jeff Thomas, 260-9265. Call in and weigh in. Every time you're on, usually the lines light up the last 15 or 20 minutes. Call in and get your thoughts and concerns in. We'll be back after the break.
WBOK, 1230 AM, the People's Station.
You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird. Lee, President Gallo and his staff would like you to send them the link or the session, the interview that he did on the Good Morning Show. So they'll be reaching out to you. So and giving you the place, the spot that they can send it to. This is OT. We're back with Mr. Think 504, man. Roe Brown. I tell folks, man, Roe Brown is more than just a sportscaster, walking almanac, and the guy who walked across the Tupelo, the pipe on the Tupelo Canal in 0.5 seconds with Earl and Oil on the pipe. Roe said in a conversation with his sister, and it's actually a comedic analogy. It's actually in that Trump's President-elect Trump and his appointment of cabinets was kind of like in the episode from Batman.
Right.
When Penguin was the mayor of Gotham, and he started naming the Joker and the Riddler.
The Riddler. That was his cabinet.
The cabinet positions. Giuliani got to be the Joker.
Oh, I tell you. That's right. Well, who's the Riddler? Maybe that's Steve Bannon
guy. Steve Bannon is the Riddler.
There you go. Right, I tell you.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. That was a funny episode. And I remember seeing it. What was the character that was Dusty? And I can't remember. It was... It was purple dust in the, I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
We're going to make that Romney.
Yeah, right. There you go.
But anyway, back to what we were talking about. The role of Democrats right now.
Right.
In this, you know, and I think that was really perfect for you to say that, you know, everybody's predicting the demise of the Democrats. I mean, just a few months ago, they said Trump was going to destroy the Republicans.
Sure.
Trump really hit both parties.
Absolutely.
To be honest with you. The Republicans, they may be sucking up right now.
That's right.
But they can't be happy.
That's right.
That they cannot be happy that the Penguin is the president.
That's right. Well, he's an enigma. I mean, the fact is that you don't really know what you're going to get from Trump, from a Trump presidency. He's been a Democrat. He's been a Republican. Right. Some of his policy issues that he supports are liberal, others are ultra conservative, so we're not sure what we're going to get from this guy. So I think that the important thing is that we understand that politics are local and that we control what happens here in New Orleans. If we do that, then the things that happen, you're not going to get the $1 million check from Trump.
Well, what about the conversations now we're seeing? The thing that Trump has already, well, the thing that Trump never divorced was money.
Right.
And we see now whether it's the Philippines, this branding, the fact that he will not divest. He's actually letting his children run his company while he runs the world. More, these are the things that I think are of greater concern than some of the other foolishness we're hearing.
Well, that's right. And so we don't know how entrenched Trump is economically around the world. I mean, he didn't release his taxes, so we have no clue about his holdings around the world and how the U.S. government is going to be interlinked with that. Right. And those are the kinds of things that people were willing to look the other way
for. I see the Philippines just named one of his business partners as their ambassador.
Is that right? You know, is that a coincidence? I wonder. I think not. Well, you know, that's the thing.
Smart move on that part.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I think that we can focus on Trump, and it's important that we rally against him when he does things like Jeff Sessions and Steve Bannon, and we talk about those things and prepare for the eventualities that are to come with these ultra-right-wing conservative appointments. Those are things we're going to have to fight. But, again, I just want to stress and emphasize that I believe, truthfully, that Donald Trump's presidency is going to be a boon economically for African Americans, that we're going to be okay.
And we need to make sure of that.
Right. And so if we handle, like you said earlier, investing in black banks, investing in black businesses, if we are fiscally responsible as people, then we can capitalize on this Trump presidency.
No doubt. Thank you. Let's get local right now. There's a discussion about the fire millage that's on the ballot. We know that I think it was lumped in with the law enforcement millage. Last time it was defeated. They pulled out the part that they think we may like the most, but there's still some issues with that.
Yeah, well, you know, the upcoming ballot is going to be interesting. You know, we have the Senate race on that ballot. And we have two tax items. We also have a judgeship, which is an important runoff battle between Paul Bonin and Kevin Guillory. He was a surprise into the runoff. I thought
he was the Donald Trump of this election.
Absolutely.
Very little money, mostly just social media, and the name Guillory.
That's right. And you know he was good in the debates. He's an engaging personality, and you know it's going to be.
I think he's the next assistant ADA, assistant district attorney.
That's right, and he had the support of our district attorney, and so that may have helped him some. And so that's going to be an interesting race. race. But also we have two tax millages mm-hmm. on the ballot, which are interesting. The Sewage and Water Board, where it's a renewal of right. that existing tax, which is an important thing I think we should support. But also, you know, you're right. The mayor is trying to get the funding to support this fireman's pension, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
And you're right. Previous, on the last election, during the last election cycle, it was lumped in with the NOPD. And the thinking generally was because people were against the NOPD, because of the consent decree, because mm-hmm. of all of these issues surrounding NOPD, the firemen
firemen seem to have a little more love than the police these days.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's been decades. It's been mm-hmm. decades that this pension ball has been kicked.
The can's been kicked down the road.
Right. And so it's something that we're going to have to deal with. The mayor was put on house arrest by Judge Kern Reese. I mean, the political dynamics about this thing are right. significant.
Right.
And so you would think that this would be something that the people would support. You know, it's on the millage by itself. But I say not so fast.
Right.
Hold, slow down, Kemosabe.
People are, even with the sewage and water board drainage, as much as we need that, people are just in anti-millage mode. And I've seen millages that should roll over,
mm-hmm.
like the one for drainage in New Orleans East mm-hmm. several years ago
mm-hmm.
that folk voted against.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some concern there.
Well, there's a lot of millage fatigue that's happening right
period.
Now. I mean, think about it. The state is raising fees and cutting mm-hmm. services, and so people now from your cell phone to water bills, those mm-hmm. kinds of things, they're going up, right? And we have all of these taxes about schools and school millages and all of these things. And so people's
right.
taxes are going up. So there's going to be a lot of millage fatigue. People are going to be concerned about raising
point,
their
Jeff.
Taxes even more.
Right. And talk about millage fatigue, that in many times, you know, when there's millage fatigue, people tend to just vote no.
Yeah, exactly right. And usually when people, because, and that's one of the things I've been a proponent of, is that changing this ballot language to everyday, easy to read and mm-hmm. understand mm-hmm. Information that people, when they go into the polls, because a lot of people go in and read those things for the first time, and it's legalese and it's complicated, and you don't know if you're voting for or against something, and sometimes a vote for is a vote against, and so it's complex on purpose, and I think politicians do that intentionally. But the thing is that we need to have really easy to understand
right.
information on the ballots that people can know what they're voting for.
And we
for.
Found out last time the African American community basically killed the law enforcement millage.
That's
rare. Usually you can count on us voting for a tax even if we're broke.
That's right.
But that tendency has changed.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to lines right now. Line one, Reverend Ricasso, you're on with MrThink504.com. Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, my brothers, enjoying the show, and of course your guests are most knowledgeable and a happy belated Thanksgiving to you, my brothers.
Same to you
and your family. But let me say this. You're right, all politics are local.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. We need to be more engaged regardless to what party you attest to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down to these local taxes,
mm-hmm.
I tend to have a different view upon them. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we gave Sewage and Water Board through the vote 12 years renewal of the tax.
That's right.
Yes.
And now we come in with another tax for Sewage and Water Board,
mm-hmm.
and we still got streets that get flooded because of broken pipes. Where is the money going? When you talk about fixing the street, man, Claiborne Avenue, which runs from one end to the other, every time you look, they patching over what they was already supposed to have fixed. And we supposed to give them more money to do that kind of stuff. And then when you get down to the firemen, who I love, who do an excellent job, but we got to be critical thinkers. We got to look at why.
Hello.
We lost it.
One responsible for them messing over that money,
mm-hmm.
giving it up early to pensions, and having their pension board invest in everything but New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and then we gonna try and patch that up under the guise of,
wow.
oh, it's been so long, I dog it, it's gonna be longer than that, because I'm voting no for them tax issues. And it's not because we don't understand, it's because we do understand.
Mm-hmm.
We keep giving money, and we see very little, especially in our community. Man, where the Katrina money went to Sixth Street?
Reverend Kasdan.
Yeah,
Reverend Kasdan, I want to ask you about that, though, because you know, of course, you've been labeled as one of the people who led the opposition to the last tax, especially in talking about it. Where is this movement coming from now where actually voters are actually paying more attention to these millages and taxes?
Yeah. Well, you know where it's coming from? Because our head has been bumped up against the wall too many times, and
right.
through that process, we begin to see more clearly. We are paying for services that we in our community don't see.
That's right.
And
that's
streets, right. streets in our neighborhood were supposed to be fixed first, and we look at that money sprayed everywhere, and we still got potholes, leaking streets, no curbside, nothing. And you back again asking for more taxes? Look, you know, civil service workers haven't got a raise, if I'm not mistaken, under this mayor since he's been in. Where's the money going to come from? If you do simple addition and subtraction, you taking more from us than you giving, and we ain't receiving nothing for. And the bottom line is, I don't care how much I love you. If I ain't got it, you can't get it.
Right.
I'm going to hang up and listen to what y'all doing. I'm going to do what I'm doing. We're going to see you at the Fatherhood Roundtable where we talk about these kind of issues.
Thank you.
Y'all
Thank
have a good
you
one,
too.
My brother.
Thank you. That's the major
Well, he stole some of my thunder.
Right
and absolutely right. You know, we have a pension board
right.
that has been charged by the Inspector General of mm-hmm. bilking the citizens of $150 million. They're misusing the money. That's part of the problem. But there is a deeper problem
from my
perspective.
And I think Reverend Ricazza right. laid out some of that. Is that just a concern with, even if it is a renewal, if I don't see how it's benefit my community, then the hell with the renewal.
Well, exactly right. Exactly right. As it relates to the sewage and water
right.
bill. But as we focus
right.
on the fire department
right.
millage, which is the even more controversial
right.
than sewage and water
right.
bill, here is, for me, the dilemma that the African-American voter today is faced with when he goes into that poll.
Right.
Let's talk about the history of the New Orleans Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
It has the most racially discriminatory hiring practices of all the city government agencies. At a time when the city had a population of about 60% African Americans, and City Hall was transforming, and City Hall employees were about 55% of the employee base, and the NOPD
right.
was about 55% African American, you had a lily white fire department, 75% to 80%.
Now, our fire chief and our police chief are two of the most popular people in the community.
Love them. Great guys.
But you separate them from the department.
Exactly right. That's not what we're talking about. And we're not talking about past tense. We're talking about, we're not talking about today. We're talking about past tense.
Right.
And we're talking about, because this is, we're talking about the pension board. I see we got the lines lit up.
Lit
you want to go for
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Line two, Reverend Calhoun. You're on with Mr. Think 504, Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And I trust all had a happy holiday.
Yes, we did.
Yes, sir.
But I need to echo a little bit behind Dr. Ricazza.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of money has came to fix streets and infrastructure here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, as it stands, since they did the ribbon cutting on for Galvin Street,
mm-hmm.
you have not seen any work infrastructure-wise in the lower Ninth Ward. North of Claiborne Street, north and south streets, flood and all those. You can't go two blocks on any one of them streets before you start tearing the car up.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my problem, Oliver. Where has all that money gone? Why has the work, as it is on the website, my street, the 2100 block of Delaware, does not get fixed till 2022? To be completed in 2023. So what happens to that money? Where
question.
Is all this money that, because like you said, when you go back, you look at the garbage collection, that doubled.
Mm-hmm.
When you start tracking all this money, we don't see the benefits here. Not in the neighborhoods I live, that I live in, nor does we visit.
Yeah.
So tell me, how does these millages help us?
Thank you, Reverend Calhoun
and Reverend Ricazza are talking about the millage fatigue that we're describing,
yeah.
and they're laying it out.
Millage fatigue, I think that's a great label.
Exactly right, and so that's the issue. I mean, people are concerned about where money is being spent. They aren't seeing the benefits. We're voting for these taxes, but we don't see, like Reverend Calhoun just said, streets being fixed in our neighborhoods.
So a lot of good initiatives are actually caught up in this fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right, and so that's a problem that the city is going to have to deal with. I know you got another call. Go ahead, grab it.
Line three, Mr. Solomon, you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thomas.
God bless you.
Good morning.
How y'all doing?
We're doing good, Mr. Smith.
Look, I stand to be corrected on anything that I say. Mm-hmm. But I want to piggyback on what Reverend Rick Kasner and
Reverend Calhoun
just said. Mm-hmm. Now, what about that building at the head of, at the end of Canal Street? That Trade Center?
World Trade
building?
Center.
Oh, yeah, that's
yes.
right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's my understanding he went lowball for his friends, whereas it was $900 million that he went for and left $2 billion over, what, I think it's 100 years?
Yeah, allegedly, we gave up close to $1 billion or $600 million. I think that's allegedly, yeah.
Nah, and if I understand right, the chief of police wife used to come on here, Oliver, and I think she's a CPA.
She's a financial consultant.
Maybe Mitch need to hire that lady.
She's good.
You know
no,
what
she's
doing.
Good.
You know her
that's
man.
Right.
Yes, she's
that's
good.
That's right. Yes.
Now, another thing, We've been calling for the city council to come on this radio for the longest to explain to us where did that money go? All that money.
Right.
You understand? The money for the street plus the $7.8 billion that came through for other things. Mm-hmm. Nobody came. Now there's a mayoral race coming up, and my understanding is correctly, one or two of them have thrown their hat in the ring.
You're going to have a bunch of council members
listen
running.
To William Solomon James, Jr. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you can't come talk to me, you can't talk for me.
Mm.
And I'm telling you that. And that not only go for the city council, but it go for the legislature also. And Ms. Karen Carter Peterson, you know where we stand when you're messing with our children with them schools.
Mr. Solomon, let me ask you a question.
Now, wait, let me say this, Oliver.
Yes.
Dr. Bowie had a clean bill that would have returned the schools back all at once the way they took them. Mm-hmm. But this lady chose to condescend that and do another bill that will stretch them out. Well, that means our children are going to be out on those streets just that much longer. So my thing is, if anything should happen to those children as a result of that bill, I'm going to look at you, Ms. Peterson, and all of those who supported that. Now, what were you saying?
Yeah, Ms. Solomon, I'm going to go to Jeff Thomas's comment about millage fatigue. And we're seeing this across the country right now. I think the election represented some of it. And I think, and especially, you know, you could always count on New Orleans African-American voters to vote for any increase, even though we had less money. So you're saying in many cases, because of the overall political environment, that even some of these initiatives that should be considered, people are leaning to voting no.
Exactly. I mean, then, Oliver, what you got to think about is what the governor is doing in reference to what Bobby Jindal left us.
Good point.
So, I mean, you're just coming at us too many
Good
ways.
Point.
And, Mr. Mayor, you know how you and I stand. I don't particularly care for you as a mayor. Yeah. Now, you as a person, no disrespect, because I don't know you as a person. Right. But as a mayor, you're deadbeat dad when it comes to my community.
Thank you.
And you can't get anything from me. And one thing I want to say, Reverend Calhoun, you came on Chuck Perkins' show, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, because you were supporting this guy over in Jefferson Parish who was messing with that young boy. Now, my thing is this.
No, that was Reverend Wallace. That wasn't Reverend Calhoun.
That,
yeah, that wasn't Reverend Calhoun.
I respect
Calhoun.
The fact that you came and got in the hot seat and you took your licks. I respect that. And maybe if the city council would do the same thing, I would respect them more. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. I don't think that was Reverend Calhoun. No, I think it was another Reverend. Mr. Lawrence. You're on with Jeff Thomas.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with him that all elections are local. But I've been looking at something else. For some time now, there's a lot of xenophobia going on in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking at Donald Trump now as their head hero.
Yes,
that's right.
You know, even attacking a lady in Germany.
Yeah, Merkel.
Yeah, and Germany has really got a nice economy and everything, but they're attacking her now.
That's right.
You got a guy that's running on a conservative ticket in France to try to become. So I don't think this thing is to be taken so lightly. You know?
Well, no. Listen,
and
I think important.
That's why we had the discussion first about
supremacy
versus nationalism. I don't think you can. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things I want to talk about, the main point that I want to talk about, we're hearing a lot of millage fatigue stories, and it's important that people express themselves, and these are real, and this is important considerations that the public is going to have to take when they go into that ballot box. One other issue that's significant that nobody's brought up about the fire department is this, which I think is extremely important for an African-American electorate. The pensions that we're talking about funding are for a fire department that was practicing racial discrimination and hiring practices at the time. So we're talking about a department that was 80% white. And so we're talking about funding the pensions of white people who don't live in the city and who, you know, have not invested in our community. And we're talking about taxing black people today, poor black people today, not necessarily all black people are poor, but we're talking about sending our tax dollars in the city of New Orleans, where we have all kinds of serious needs, to fund the pensions of people who were the beneficiaries of racial discrimination in terms of hiring.
Now, you mentioned this can have been kicked down the road. This was a, an agreement that was made with the pension board, with the fire department leadership years ago.
Yes.
That just has not been addressed.
Correct.
These chickens have come home to roost.
They have. And, you know, listen, I understand the mayor's in a tough spot here because, I mean, he's got, you know, a judge breathing down his neck.
Right.
He's got the firefighters who fought, who worked for their pensions. But now who's going to pay for that? And the city of New Orleans has to pay for it. Where does the money come from? Are we going to tax ourselves in the midst of all this fatigue that we're hearing about? You know, we got state taxes increasing. We got all kinds of local taxes going up. And also now you're asking me to vote to fund the pension of some white guys who live in a meat because this can was kicked down the curb. I just don't know how that's going to pass, if it's going to pass. And it's going to be a tough road for the mayor to hold.
Now, we got about a minute or so left, man. PBS Pinchback, Broad Street.
Yes, yes. Listen.
You've been pushing this for quite some time.
And we're about to make this happen, I think. We're working with the city council. And, you know, PBS Pinchback, for those of you who don't know, was the only governor in the history of the state of Louisiana. He was the first African-American governor in the history of this country. And also, I mean, he did a lot of great things. He was a U.S. congressman. He was a U.S. senator. Even though he wasn't allowed to serve because he was an African American.
You're a senator, but you can't serve.
You can't be there. But listen, he founded Southern University. And you know where Southern University was founded? Right here in New Orleans, Louisiana. He bought land. One of the controversies surrounding him is that because of his political astuteness, he was the beneficiary of some land deals. But let me tell you, most of the land that he acquired, Grambling University is sitting on that land.
Right.
High schools in Shreveport are sitting on that land. And so he was a guy who could have passed for white at the time, easily.
He did like Trump.
You know, he was a master politician. And I think, you know, we don't necessarily need to fight the fight of, taking down the name of Claiborne, who was a slave-owning governor of the state of Louisiana. But we have an African-American, historic, first and only African-American governor in the history of our state. Go ahead.
We've dealt with some heavy subjects, but we got some good stuff, some lighthearted stuff, holidays that are going on. Warren Easton.
Yes.
McDonough 35.
Football.
Carr.
Oh, yeah.
All
we got
still
some great
in the playoffs.
Yeah, my Purple Knights lost, but, you know, hey, man, that's okay.
Robert Kelly, he couldn't get in the game when he was at Tulane, but he's starting.
That's right.
Running back for the Washington Redskins.
That's right. It's an amazing – you know, listen, our state historically is one of the biggest – football factories. And
Per capita.
It's the reason that people are disappointed that LSU has a 7-4 record now. I mean, we had some of the best talent on that team.
Right.
It's got to be good coaching. That's the issue. And I don't know if this guy Herman from Houston is going to do a good job or not. But, you know, they got to bring some offensive firepower to the Tigers, and I think we'll be good then.
And the Saints, I think, just building for next year.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I'm concerned about Sean Payton's legacy. I'm concerned about Sean Payton. I think he's stale. I think you and I can look at the game down the distance and the players and know what player is going to come, and I'm sure the other NFL coaches can do
the same. And another hot ticket, man, Gospel on the River, man, with WBOK.
Absolutely.
This Sunday, Gospel on the River this Sunday.
How can you pass it up? Boy, you're cruising on the river and hearing some good gospel music. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, Gospel on the River, man. You want to make sure you go into Eventbrite at gospelontheriver.eventbrite.com or call 504-943-2416. Be there with me and Jeff Thomas, the early bird. Man, we're going to be singing in Gospel on the River. And in Bayou Classic, man, it's big,
man,
it's hot.
Traffic is
again
terrible downtown, but that's a good thing. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely.
Jeff Thomas, man, you promised to come back.
Oh, OT, if you have me, you know I'll be here. You let me know when to come, and I'm showing up that day.
Well, Mr. 504, you always make us
think.
And
504.
And WB makes it what?
Okay.
This is OT and the Early Bird. Talk about being okay, man. We're going to talk to one of the great parish presidents of our time, Joe Dumas, old running partner and teammate.
Yeah, huh? That's right.
I can guarantee you They and the political leader in the state with a better jump shot than Guy McGinnis. We'll be back after the break.
Sounds good.